about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fog of dying peace. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you're running down my countrymen, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey. They preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country house, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fog of dying peace. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you're running down my country, man. You're walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on AltRightTV.com or WhiteResistanceRadio.com. You can reach us through either channel. it's widely reported and that behind much of the agitation for open-door immigration to Europe, basically the enabling of the mass invasion of non-white people, of third world people into Europe, is an evil man by the name of George Soros. Now, and he's not the only problem, but he's a prime supporter and enabler and mover behind this. Why he hates the European people, why he hates white people, is perhaps a bit of a mystery, but he does. And he's also a person who has massively funded organizations that support this invasion. On this side of the Atlantic, he's of course also strongly in favor of mass third world immigration to replace us. I suppose it comes down to the fundamental hatred of Europeans or whites, a feeling perhaps that a mixed society is easier to control. He is, of course, Jewish, George Soros. Now, he has also been a major supporter of Black Lives Matter. Going back to the disturbances in Ferguson, Missouri, where an out-of-control black rioter was shot and killed by policemen. And you probably recall the incident. This set off repeated violence in Ferguson, and later on involved sympathetic disturbances and chimp outs in other cities. Now, it didn't last as long as the fallout from the death of George King, but nonetheless. So my feeling at the time, and some might say, well, that's a little cynical, but certainly our friends in the Council of Conservative Citizens in the United States would completely agree. Blacks are not that good at organizing. Riot, yes. People start off as a protest. It gets out of control. Some take advantage of the opportunity to smash store windows, turn over cars, light cars on fire, break into stores, and steal things. All supposedly in the name of whatever the protest was about. But to organize, as opposed to just a happening, it takes more than the skills that most blacks have. It also takes some money. It's one thing to have a reactive protest tonight somewhere, which turns into a riot, but to organize things on a more consistent basis requires money, and that's where a person like George Soros comes in. So you can hire a few people who can be full-time staffers and so on. Nationalist groups, in many ways, face a similar problem. It's one thing to sort of spontaneously come together for a campaign, like on a single issue, for a short period of time, but to have something that you can sustain, that will be there month after month, year after year, like the publications I put out, the Free Speech Monitor, or the Canadian Immigration Hotline, or the work that Pastor Tom Robb does with a center where people can meet, several regular publications and all that. That requires not only organization, but it requires some money. And I'm not saying the blacks don't might not have money, but they don't seem to be gifted at organizing. Which brings me back to George Soros. And this I take from Dr. James Sanchez, who's a fantastic researcher, lives down there in Seattle. Black Lives Matter is the decentralized network operated by the Movement for Black Lives, which is a unit of Color of Change, which is the black mobilization unit of Soros' network of foundations. Black Lives Matter is the new version of the Soros-created Ferguson movement, which failed, and the Soros-created Katrina movement, which failed. There have been many others. They have a short life, but they caused some mayhem during the time, and then he moves on. Well, there's a video called from MoveOn.org. Now, it's to fundraise for Black Lives Matter through the Movement for Black Lives, a new unit, which is National Bailout, which bails rioters and arsonists out of jail. In sum, Soros, 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 Soros. Let's just take a look at that pattern again. Black Lives Matter is the decentralized network operated by the Movement for Black Lives, which is a unit of Color of Change, which is the black mobilization unit of Soros' network of foundations. Soros had funded the Ferguson movement after Ferguson, Missouri, and before that, the Katrina movement. Remember, there was rioting after Hurricane Katrina, where once again, local blacks, don't forget there was a power outage and a lot of places were uninhabitable because of the flooding and so on. And there were blacks looting, I remember a picture of, in fact, it involved a black cop also looting a Walmart. And what were they taking? Don't forget, water, despite there being water everywhere, drinkable water was hard to come by. Did they take, pallets of bottled water? No. I remember a big fat black staggering out of the Walmart with a stolen television. When there's no power. it's not smart, but let's say it's not atypical. Now, the latest Soros front is the movement, is a unit called National Bailout, which will bail out the rioters and the arsonists. There are already even Hollywood stars who are prepared to put up money to help bail out these rioters. You know, we have some very sick people in our society. Now, here's part of the fundraiser. Terrence Floyd, or dear Move On member, Terrence Floyd spoke at the site of his brother's, murder, death in Minneapolis on Monday, and told the crowd that a different future is possible, because there's lots of us, he said. But that's only if each and every one of us, especially white Americans, step up urgently to stop police brutality and murder, dismantle systemic racism, and create a more just society in which black people are truly liberated and free. Well, get a job. And while not everyone can take to the streets right now, many of us can support the organizations fighting for black lives and defending protesters, defending rioters. The Movement for Black Lives was founded in the aftermath of the police killing of Michael Brown and the protests that followed in Ferguson, Missouri. It's a coalition of black organizations all working toward liberation for the black people and the fervent belief that the organizations can achieve more together than separately. National Bailout is a black-led and black-centered organization that works to end the horrific policy of pretrial detention and cash bail that keeps so many people of color in jails and people in prisons without a conviction solely for their inability to pay. National Bailout is working around the clock to bail out protesters who've been arrested en masse over the past for rioting. Anyway, it goes on in like vein, but you get the impression. Another thing that it's not exactly about the Black Lives Matter, but one of Soros' organizations was Color for Change. Now, you remember something called the Arab Spring in 2011. These started with protests, in some cases riots, in a number of Arab countries in the Middle East, with the goal of changing the government, overthrowing the government. They had some success and many failures. The Color of Change funded many of these protests. You know, a protest once or twice, it can be semi-spontaneously or organized at a fairly low, fairly inexpensive level. But to sustain protests over and over and over again, you need funding. And George Soros laid behind this, which had the result of destabilizing the Middle East, with the further result that Libya went from being a country controlled by a fairly eccentric man, Muammar Gaddafi, but he'd been in power a long time. He'd done a lot of good things for the Libyan people. And best of all, he had served as a bulwark against the African invasion of Europe. He did not allow Africans to come through Libya, get on boats, and sail across the Mediterranean. He warned Europe when it threatened, or some European countries like France and Italy and Britain, when they threatened hostilities, that he had been within his power to simply open the gates, let Africans go across Libya, and of course there'd be willing smugglers who try to smuggle them into Europe. Lots of them, of course, would drown because the smugglers are ruthless people, but nonetheless, and no attention was paid. For no good reason, the West sided with rebels in Libya, and when all was said and done, Muammar Gaddafi was overthrown, brutally butchered at the side of a road in his own country, with the result not of a democratic, wonderful regime, but an ongoing civil war. There are four distinct powers in Libya today. None of them controls the whole country. They're at constant war with each other. Meanwhile, illegals stream across Libya, and Libya is one of the major sources of the invasion, not by Libyans, but by Africans, that now that Libya is in something close to chaos, that travel across Libya and then are engaged with smugglers into Europe. Well, this is a result of Soros' mischief. There was considerable violence in an upheaval in Egypt. And, of course, the Soros-funded Arab Spring in Syria tried to take down the Syrian government. Now, it's quite complicated, and I'm not going to go into it. But nonetheless, that helped fund the beginnings of what is now a civil war that's been going on for 9 years and has killed many tens of thousands of Syrians. As I say, Syria is quite complicated, but Soros' funding and meddling has caused a lot of trouble. Now, I briefly did mention about white people who are being asked here to help fund Black Lives Matter. And isn't it ironic? There are black billionaires. Two that pop to mind are the ever-mouthy Oprah Winfrey and the somewhat quieter, more performance-oriented Tiger Woods. They're very, very rich blacks. Why don't they fund their own people? You know, it's kind of interesting that white people are being asked to essentially fund an anti-white movement. But that's not so surprising. Most people have heard of the NAACP, one of the long-time Negro organizations, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. It was founded in 1911. Among the founding members was the mother of Lyndon Baines Johnson, who'd become president of the United States in 1963. She was not black, incidentally. Did you know that the leaders of the NAACP from 1911 until into the 1970s, so for the first 50 years of the organization, were not black? I mean, many of the executives might be black, but the actual leader was not a black man or woman until the 1970s. It was a Jewish agitation group. They provided the framework and much of the money for the NAACP. Okay, which brings me to the present time and a story my good friend Brad Love told me. He said, "You've heard of Serena Williams?" I said, "Yeah, yes, I have." She is, of course, this very butchy-looking negress who is a tennis star. Yeah, I'd heard of her. He said, "Well, she's married to a white man." I said, "Give me a break." "No," he said, "she's married to a white man." I said, "Well, there's no accounting for taste, is there?" Well, anyway, apparently the white man owns quite a large business called Rickards. And he is going to step down as the president and CEO so that a black man can take over, because he wants to, he wants blacks to have more power. I think this is and don't forget, he owns the company. This is the sort of end of the civilization degeneracy that was so brilliantly predicted, or I should say foreseen, in a book. It's a novel, actually, that you absolutely must get. It's called Camp of the Saints. It was written in 1973 by a brilliant French journalist, Jean Raspail. And in this, he predicted the invasion of France. Not by hostile armies with airplanes and tanks and, you know, and battleships and missiles and all of that, but by a raggedy third world force of refugees, in quotation marks, and wretches. And they would commandeer old large boats, and he imagined them coming from India. And they arrive on the south shore of France, on the Mediterranean, and simply want a place to land and take over. Well, of course, there's some division in French society. Some say, well, you know, enforce the laws, don't let them land, if necessary, sink them, but don't let them land. Others say, oh no, they're refugees, we must be our brother's keepers, and well, we'll have to try to work out some program for them. That's what the bureaucratic traitor's response. Well, then there's the more active traitors. One is a priest. He goes running down to the beach and he embraces them, my brothers, and so on. Eventually, he gets murdered by them. Serves him right. Anyway, Raspail very shrewdly analyzed the forces at work within French society that would make resistance difficult. Not that there wouldn't be people who'd resist, but as a society, already too degenerate, too eaten out of self-hatred to really effectively in the long run resist, and the invasion wins. I see that happening today. I see institutions now pledging themselves to anti-racism. I will be reading a letter from a major Canadian company to a loyalty card holder proclaiming its commitment to anti-racism, to bending over backwards for its employees of color. That's the new term for non-whites, and so on and so on and so on. Meanwhile, I know one of its employees. Its white employees are often not very well treated. It doesn't have a great history of wonderful labor relations. Now, I ask myself why a company would even bother to get involved with this. Oh yes, as I'll read tomorrow night, the company's also pledging to give money to various anti-racist organizations. Well, where did all this anti-racist stuff come from? Well, quietly and not so quietly, it's been on the agenda in universities for a quarter of a century. Anti-racism. There are courses in it. It has become part of the mission statement of many universities, as I mentioned last night, and other institutions, now increasingly of businesses. Well, what is anti-racism? To put it in a nutshell, anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. That's right. The anti-racist is anti-white. If your company is committed to anti-racism and diversity, diversity is the bastard twin of anti-racism, what it means is they don't want more people who look like you. Probably are not interested in hiring your son or daughter, because diversity means more of the others and fewer of you. Diversity is another code word, is actually a code word for white genocide on the installment plan. They want to be rid of you. Not, incidentally, because there aren't enough of you to do the job, even in the relatively good times before the COVID virus hysteria hit us, we had significant unemployment in Canada. We had about 6%, which would be roughly, in reality, about 10%. So it wasn't that there were no people around to do jobs. Well, now, of course, after the COVID virus, so many jobs have been lost. We have probably 3 million or more people unemployed. So the idea that we would need a single foreigner is preposterous. Give jobs to Canadians. But there's a perverse motivation on the part of some companies. Partly it's greed. That they like foreign workers, not even because they necessarily work better, but because that keeps unemployment up. When unemployment is up, you can pay people less, keeps wages low. So they trade a few shekels for the demography of their own country. That's what I call treason. And of course it's something that a strong national, dare I say nationalist, government would control. We're not going to allow our country to be swamped by radically different people just to keep wages down, just so certain businesses can make more profit. Nothing wrong with making a profit, but there's something deeply wrong in suppressing wages. So, anti-racism has gradually become an ideology that we now hear invoked. In fact, last week, businesses were invoking it, politicians of many stripes in Canada, not just the left, were proclaiming their commitment to anti-racism. Anti-racism is not, as its name might suggest, opposition to the unequal or unfair treatment of people. It essentially blames all racial problems on, now wake up there, have another sip of your coffee, you! Yeah, it's your fault. White people are the source of anti-racism. Our own prime minister talked about systemic racism. He even joined an anti-racist crowd on Parliament Hill, a big protest. Even, what did they call it? Not give a knee, anyway, you knelt down. A pathetic sign, take a knee, I guess they call it, of subservience. To what? To the cause of black power. Now that, of course, lost him a lot of credibility. He's a great drama queen. He's a former high school supply teacher, drama teacher. And he's always had a penchant for dressing up and clowning. Well, that's okay. He's an entertainer, that'd be funny, I suppose, in its old way, that's okay. But no, he's the prime minister of the country. So there he is on Parliament Hill for a photo op, taking a knee, nodding supportively of various speakers denounce racism and so on. On every level, was an act of insanity. First of all, he'd been hiding out at his cottage at Harrington Lake for the last 2 months. Why? Social distancing. Why? Coronavirus. Okay, that's the party line. Social distance, you know. Keep away from other people, at least 6 feet. You know, the coronavirus will leap from one to another like the cooties. We're all infected. Even if we're not infected, we might be infected. Anyway, that was the party line. And for that reason,
with the cahoot in the cahoots with the socialists, the New Democratic Party, led by the turban guy, Jagmeet Singh. This country, the party of the working man elected a turban Sikh, and then probably lost half its seats in the last election. But the earnest, preachy turban guy has a lot of pals in the media who promote him. But anyway, with the cooperation of the NDP, the liberals who are a minority, have a minority government, they had enough votes to basically prorogue parliament until September 21st. Why? Coronavirus, but social distancing. Okay, fine, social distancing, that's what we're supposed to do. Why then, in the name of all that's good and holy, or in the name of common sense, is the leader, the prime minister of the country, in a mob on Parliament Hill, not social distancing? He's got his security detail, there are other people there crowding around there, of course, couple of his cabinet hanger-ons, including the Somali, Ahmed Hassan. He's from Mogadishu. He was our Minister of Immigration. You know, this is Camp of the Saints. A third world refugee, who's a former immigration lawyer, is Minister of Immigration. Of course, the doors were flung wide open. Are you surprised? Well, he was there too. And okay, what are the optics? Well, the optics are, you don't take this stuff seriously, do you? I mean, all this social distancing that's been imposed on us, reasons to shut much of the economy down, to ban large meetings. Oh yeah, well, technically speaking, that meeting should have been broken up, that protest. Not likely though, right? So you don't take it seriously, do you? And why should we? I'll tell you, I don't really take it seriously, because I think the coronavirus is largely an overblown hoax. I'm not saying there isn't a thing called the Wuhan flu or the coronavirus or COVID-19, whatever you want to call it. There is. And can it be quite dangerous? It can, for people with weakened systems, particularly the old. Particularly people who are already, you know, within maybe a year of death. Their bodies are severely compromised by respiratory problems or heart problems or whatever. Yes, add the COVID-19 to the mix and yes, many of them will die. I get that. But as a epidemic to, or pandemic to, shut down society, or nearly shut it down. No way. Most people will not get it. Most people who will get it will have a very mild, some symptoms of a cold. Others, it will be more severe. It will be the worst flu of their lives. That won't be a very pleasant week. But they'll get over it. Now, is the price of saving a few people worth the further price of shutting society down, or virtually doing that? On many levels, the answer is no. The economic trauma that is being caused by this, and will be caused for some time, has caused many people to lose their businesses, which is traumatic. Lose their jobs, and even though there are subsidies, this is not a good thing. Many people have had to pretty much stay in their homes, trying to educate their children who are out of school, worried about financial problems. The suicide rate is climbing. The consumption of alcohol, and probably in some cases the overconsumption, is climbing. And deaths from other causes. One of the hidden things is that many people are afraid to go to hospital. If you have a stroke, many people are afraid to seek the medical help they need, a heart attack, or worsening other conditions. These illnesses are killing and will kill many, many more people. Anyway, but the party line, the orders, the marching orders given to Canadians as the social distancing, avoid large groups, of course, restaurants have been closed, and so on. So the man who proclaims this on behalf of the China woman, Theresa Tam, our chief medical officer of health, God knows how she got that job, but anyway, is prime minister. But he's out there in a mob. And it makes it very difficult to remain a believer. Hey, you obviously by your practice don't believe it. Well, why should I? And why should we continue to deny ourselves, let's say, the opportunity to go to the beach or open a business or open a restaurant? Well, that was one thing. But on a racial level, it was even more mind-boggling. This is an anti-racism march, supposedly somehow in solidarity with George Ferguson, you know, the Negro. Oh, did you know he was been a porn actor? Yeah. Well, my friend Brad Love told me this the other day. I didn't believe him, of course, but I thought, well, why haven't I read that in the mainstream media? Don't they tell us the truth? Well, I didn't believe that either, but okay. But sure enough, among his other life accomplishments, George Ferguson had been a porn actor. And when you see his completely ugly mug, he could not have been a porn star. But he apparently did participate in some porno movies. Now, I'm not suggesting that justified his being killed, but it's part of the mix. And here he is being eulogized as a saint. But back to the prime minister. Well, what was the purposes of the protest? Well, it's more than just, you know, we feel sorry for George Floyd. No, it was an attack on racism. And Trudeau has proclaimed his commitment to anti-racism. And he went on to talk about systemic racism in Canada. So he's at a protest, among other things, protesting systemic racism in Canada. That means that the whole system is racist. He was also opposing white supremacy. Do you see a contradiction here? Or an absurdity? Don't forget, he's the prime minister. He's the head of the government. Which, according to him, it's part of white supremacy and racism. Systemic racism. That means that the system is actually racist, even though it doesn't know it is. Well, wait a second. He essentially is the system, or let's say he's the head of the system. What's he outside protesting his system for? He's in power. I don't say he ought to do something about it, but I mean, theoretically, he should do something about it, right? If he believes this. White supremacy. Well, again, this does worry me. The lack of ability of at least our official commentators to think. White supremacy. I'm sorry. White supremacy. Okay, white supremacy. What would that mean? Well, it would mean the whites rule things for their own benefit and lord it over other people. You think that might be a working definition of white supremacy? All right. He heads a government that has increased the numbers of the third world invasion every year of Canada. Our goal is for this year, and we probably won't make it, hooray, about 340,000 new people, almost all from the third world, every year, or this year. And it will be more next year, and there were slightly fewer last year. He's on a track to bring a million people to Canada within 3 years. That's a larger number than all but four cities in Canada. This is the ethnic replacement or ethnic cleansing of a people. Would a white supremacist, that is one who wants the white people to remain in power, although I think it means something more, it means dominating others, but okay, in the very loose definition of white supremacist, would that be the those be the actions of a white supremacist? Well, of course not. There's an insanity afoot. Well, let's have my musical interlude right now, and maybe something a little bit more not necessarily cheerful, inspirational. I very much like this singer, Randy Travis, has a great voice. He's a committed Christian man. He's had some problems in life, which he's largely overcome. Randy Travis, and hope you like it.
You may think that I'm talking foolish. You've heard that I'm wild and I'm free. You may wonder how I can promise you now. This love that I feel for you always will be. You're not just time that I'm killing. I'm no longer one of those guys. As sure as I live, this love that I give is gonna be yours until the day that I die. Oh baby, I'm gonna love you forever. Just sitting there. spent a lot of time thinking of this perfect love I know is yours and mine. And oh, how I love that old picture on the wall of you and me and the kids, my most favorite times in life I've spent right here where we live. There's no place like home, there's no place like home. It just hit me as I was leaving, there's no place like home. From the bedroom I smell perfume, my favorite kind you wore, and it brings back memories of all those nights behind our bedroom door. And the saddest thing I think I've ever seen was my closet all cleaned out. That one must leave, cause we can't work things out. There's no place like home, there's no place like home. It just hit me as I was leaving, there's no place like home. So baby, say that I can stay for just a day or so. Then maybe I can change your mind and I won't have to go. Just look into these baby blues and tell me it's okay. I love that smile, it drives me wild. No love won't die today. There's no place like home, there's no place like
wishing she was mine. If that same old love
lost love story. It's sad, but it's true. There was a time when she was mine in 1982. Postman, can you sell me a special kind of stamp? From this crazy lonely man back into the wasted years of my living past. I need to tell her now I know how long my love will last. They say hindsight's 20/20, but I'm near.
That you love me too, and would we cry together?
would you simply laugh at me and say, I told you so.
Randy Travis's, and this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow, and I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on allwhitetv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose entwine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. Save our queen and heaven.